I'm really pleased to welcome back somebody I haven't seen for a while and who last time I saw you was actually pretty much in the same context. Yeah. His name is Alex Liris. This is not kissing up to you, brother, but you're an amazing actor. You're an amazing writer. The plays, the theater work that you do have always blown my mind. So you're back here to talk about the latest piece that you got going, all right? And it's called Plasticity. Tell us about it, Alex. Welcome first.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate you and KPFK more and more. That's the first thing. It's an honor to be here and on the station. We do need it. We have to have some voice, and this is a powerful one. I go back and forth from New York, but I listen to KPFK when I'm over there because we don't really have this type of thing in New York. There's some good stations, WFUV, and people that are not tied to any corporations. So you get good programming, but not quite as deep and it's not quite as direct. So thanks for having me.
Sure. Well, thanks for coming in, man.
Yeah.
And now we'll dig into it, all right? So tell people, Plasticity, what is it about?
Plasticity is a play about a guy who's emerging from a coma, and he's on his way to healing, but people don't know that on the outside. So you have legal battles and very grave neurological decisions being made, and internally you see this guy emerging from a coma into consciousness, and that is expressed visually. And it ends up being quite a positive story of recovery. But in the meantime, there's a little bit of feuding going on. And it's running at the Hudson Theater in Hollywood. And it's really taking off. It's being very well received.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me because when I went in to see it, I was blown away. Actually, I was blown away by everything, by the fact that you play, 150 roles in it?
I think there's 13.
13, but. Yeah. But everything about it, I mean, it's one of these things that actually, the whole, when you step back and you're engaged with the individual pieces, and you do play, you know, you do actually play at least voice and play a number of characters in the play.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the only actor in the play, right?
Yeah, that's always a hard thing to say, like a one-person show sends people running from the theater. But this is not an autobiographical thing about my life and my struggles. This is an attempt to capture something economically, you know, because theater is expensive and it's hard to put things on. So, yes, I'm the only actor, but I'm acting against projections. And we have this very cool setup, which is really technologically it was challenging. We have a screen in front of the actor called a scrim. It's a shark tooth scrim. You can see through it, but it can also hold an image. So I can act across a version of myself that I recorded in August. For example, a neurologist is on the scrim, and I am the twin brother talking to him about my brother's in a coma. And it really creates a dialogue. It feels like a play. It doesn't feel like a solo show. But it's a good way to go for me as a producer as well, because it's an affordable thing. You can put on a show. You can create theater.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that happens in this is that you're sitting there and you're watching it, and all of the characters, all of the various characters. But there's a point here where you realize that there is, and I think actually even the whole way that it is staged, you realize that there's this big overarching, you know, question that's being posed there for me. And I was wondering, in terms of when you were, you co-wrote the play with someone, right?
Yeah, my longtime partner, Rob McCaskill, right. Who's the director.
Right. Now, when you guys were sitting down and talking about this, there's this bigger picture here of, like, I mean, look, one, and I know you like science.
Yeah.
And you also like, you know, sort of exploring things. And this was a hell of a thing, man, because you're sitting there and you have this, you know, you have science interacting with humanity and all of the foibles and the beliefs and the pulls of that humans get into. But they're going up against science, and it's not really against it, but sometimes it appears to be. It must have been hellified to actually figure all this out, man, because it's very powerful.
Yeah, it's got multiple themes, and it's been the ultimate testament is that people are coming back two and three times. Just for the visuals, people are seeing that there is a visual theme, and there's a color theme. So we have a very kind of traditional story that people have seen in hospital dramas on television, which is end-of-life issues. Who makes the call? There's a brother, and he has certain rights, but there's a fiancé, and she knows the guy in the coma better than the brother, who's overseas and, you know, doing his own thing. So we have a fight there, and who should make the call? So that's one element that's very important. And then there's the mystery of the brain, which just gets more and more fascinating the more and more we know. We see the brain can heal itself in different ways. And in the past, we used to think that our brains were hardwired. We had, you know, decision making in the parietal lobe and vision in the occipital lobe. And well, guess what? If you have an injury and your occipital lobe is damaged, give yourself a couple years and the part of the brain that takes care of hearing will take over and start to help with vision. That's just one example. There are so many. So the brain is a mystery. We're just figuring out. I've read so much about it. I can't tell you how fascinating and exciting it is. And then we dramatize it in the show. And someone said, oh, wow, this sounds like a radio lab piece, or this sounds like a, you know, it's like a documentary. We're learning and it's entertaining. And at the same time, we've built a very traditional five act structure story that will keep you hooked.
Yeah, it certainly does. And one of the things actually, even as I was going over and preparing for this, because I saw the play, it was opening night, right? And so that was a little while back. But, you know, the thing that got me is that, you know, when you're dealing with this subject, one is, yes, this point of, and I read somewhere where you had to really dig in deep to understanding the brain and how it works and how it, you know, I mean, just what happens to it, you know, in the case of injury. But you also have, there's a situation in, and I think in this country in particular, where, you know, if you end up in a coma somewhere and your brain is injured, you better hope you have a hellified group of people who know what they're doing, and not just know what they're doing in terms of, you know, watching you or something or taking care of you medically, but actually understanding all the various parameters that are called into play there. And that's one of the things I was really amazed by what you were able to marshal in this, because, you know, I can't remember the woman's name. It was a young woman in Florida, and her family, based on religious beliefs, wanted to keep this woman who was dead. And, you know, she had been declared, dead.
Brain dead, yeah.
Brain dead, yeah. Which is not something that actually happens in your play, but it's nobody knows. But the thing is what you wrestle with is what sort of, on what basis is a decision made? And you don't, you know, go ahead, let's talk about that.
Well, I mean, it's an intense moment, and, it's hard to say what mindset you're in this situation. One thing we wanted to tackle was the different mindsets. Who's right? We wanted to cover the insurance perspective. So in the middle of this play, we cut to an insurer who's on the scrim, who's like, you know what? We have our concerns, and why is this guy still in ICU? And we're running a business, and our hospital needs to pay its bills and cut him off. And this comes like moments after a really heart-wrenching moment of like, maybe if we keep him in ICU longer. So you are talking about, you better have a hellified people fighting on your side. Yes. My mother was a nurse for 50 years. And the first thing she would do if it was her own family is humanize the patient to the rest of the hospital staff. Like, here's my husband's paintings, or here's my son's soccer thing. Mm. Like, this is a human being here. I'm invested. I need you to be invested. Because, yeah, hospitals have to make money too. But so that's a jarring moment. And my writing partner wanted to cover the insurance aspect. It's not a lot. It's these three little segments, but it really sends you for a loop, because you're like, oh, wow, there's that perspective. And I think the woman in Florida, I think they lost the case. I can't remember. It's been a while since I've read it. But, yeah, everyone has their perspective. And if you're a good dramatist, you make the audience empathize with each position.
Well, the thing in Florida, the reason I brought that up is because I thought it was very different than what you're dealing with, what you're wrestling with in this play. Because on the one hand, there were some definitive things said about her. But you seem to be exploring all of, you know, in terms of science actually had determined that, you know, she was brain dead, and she had been declared brain dead.
Yeah.
And so the thing there, and then her family was bringing in all this religious stuff, and, you know, but in your play, you're dealing with something where, on a lot of different angles, you show all the various pulls, including the brother who actually, you can't help it, you know, okay, like, you know, he's his twin brother, and he's, you know, he cares about the cat, but at the same time, it's like, who the hell's gonna pay for this stuff?
Yeah.
You know, and it's sort of, you know, those questions come up, and it was fascinating how you did that, because all those things and then the question of science, you know. I mean, learning about the brain, you knew there were times, there actually is a time, yes, the brain can recoup and do this stuff, which I learned a lot from your thing, but there's also a time when the brain actually can die, too.
Yeah. So, you know, the inspiration from the show came from two stories. Rob McCaskill had a friend who had an aneurysm in New York, and they knew within 7 days he wasn't coming back. You know, you can do your scans, you can tell, you know, this guy is not coming back. And he went to visit him, and there was an issue where he had no family left, and there was a girlfriend, and the hospital was like, who's going to make the call? Well, there's a fight between two ex-girlfriends at the foot of this guy's bed. And you're just looking at each other, and Rob's calling me and saying, this is a dramatic setting, my friend. Like, this is really happening. So we knew we wanted to capture desperation. We're in it now, actually, as a country, you know, just seeing people raise the stakes in terms of what action can we take. So that was an inspiration. A second one was, I had a priest at my church who I was an altar boy for, and he used to sing the Divine Liturgy, because I'm Greek Orthodox. So he sings this Divine Liturgy. I'm an altar boy. My friend who is in film records it. So this priest declines, and he's about 78, maybe 80 years old, and he's kind of in a minimally conscious state in the hospital. And they say, go visit Father Peter, because he's at the end. So my friend and I go, and the family's around, and my friend who recorded him puts digital headphones on the priest in the hospital bed and plays the Divine Liturgy from when the priest was singing it 30 years ago. And the guy's eyes light up. The priest is like crying in the bed. The family's crying. We're all crying around. And that was my aha moment. He came back to life hearing himself as a younger man. It was one of the most fascinating and emotional things. The whole room was just silence to see consciousness return. And a man who had heard himself, like, probably got transported and felt like he was a young man again. He died several days later. But I started picking up books about the brain and reading about Oliver Sacks and the whole nine.
Yeah. And, you know, there was a film out a couple years ago about a guy who, just this schmo in Long Island, I think. And he was going to a nursing home where people were basically kind of catatonic, a lot of them. And he brought some music in, and he was visiting someone, and he saw that this person, it was music that this person liked. And had, you know, had been singing when he was a young guy with scat music, and he was, you know, it was sort of, that was his life and that was his love. And this guy starts to play it, and this guy, the guy who was hospitalized, actually opened up his eyes and came back into the world. And so there was this whole point about what actually hits that. But then, see, what actually, when you play things like music, when you do this, it stimulates the brain and brings some action back, some activity back in your body, in your head. But at the same time, you can't be, you know, and this is what I loved about the thing, because you walked in your play, you walked a very, very narrow, you know, tightrope, because you can't suddenly go from, okay, yeah, there's, you know, there's all this stuff we don't know about the brain and the and tremendous complexity of it and its ability to recover and come back. But there's also a time when people become brain dead.
Yeah.
And that's a heavy line to walk, you know?
Yeah, there's a couple of wonderful documentaries on HBO. There's one about four kids recovering from traumatic brain injury, TBI, and they not all of them make it, and the one that does is not fully healed. So our story doesn't have a totally happy ending, but it is optimistic in terms of the seeds that get planted for the future.
Yeah, and including the fact that people have to approach this. There's no sort of, you know, well, we'll just, there's a pat way you can approach it. This happens, you do this, you know. It's not, it's something that's actually much more complex, but you also can't, and this is what got me too, is as I said earlier, the fact that you actually carried with you science, and then you also had this, you know, this other thing of like, well, we haven't declared any of this yet. I got out of the science that you were talking about in the play was also that the science kept continually opening new doors as opposed to shutting them. Now, there may be a point where it was going to shut the door and say, this is over, but it was opening all these new doors that I thought was actually taking the audience in a whole lot. You know, you'd be thinking something and all of a sudden say, wait a minute, that's right. You could do this, you know.
It is dizzying, and I think we can open the political door now to our discussion about, you know, funding and stem cells and supporting these companies, because we are at an immense precipice. We are learning so much, and with the continuation of research, we are going to have some very amazing answers in the pipeline, and to think that we have to fight for this, we have to fight for knowledge, is it's weird to be set back. It's weird to be set back, because the door is just opening.
Mm-hmm. And as in other work you've done, it doesn't seem to be that there's like, you know, you can't just look at the play and say, okay, it's a straight line theme, because you have all kinds of other questions that get taken up. You have questions around the national question, you know, is it the one nurse?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have questions.
Yeah, around, our whole hospital staff, I mean, you know, and this happened in London before here, in England, but they're staffed up by immigrants. I mean, those are the people that are the nurses and the healthcare people. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of that here. You want to throw those people out, we're going to see a decline in of the foundation of mm-hmm. something like healthcare and restaurants and stuff like that.
Well, I'm just reading this one thing where it says like the Henry Bones character, the treatments and care administered to David, the character, the patient, even long after his insurance coverage has expired, are a luxury bestowed only on people of means, which is kind of, you know, you bring that in. And then you also have the question of the person who's the advocate, you know, one of the strongest advocates for David is his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then the woman question and how much, you know, how much is she allowed to actually fully participate in this without, you know.
You got a bunch of men who are making decisions, and I don't play a woman on the stage, but she is a strong presence. And yes, she's hearing what to do from men, and men are telling her what to do, and this doctor's a man, and that consultant is a man, and the brother's a man, and he's first. Well, and this brings us back to the Florida case and the religious case. She's not overtly religious, but faith is unwavering in her. She knows he's going to recover, and I don't want to give the ending away because I think it's worthwhile to balance these two things out, but there is something invaluable to faith. Logic does not have all the answers, and sometimes faith gets you through. And you take a philosopher who's an analytic philosopher, and things get shaky for him in his own life, he's going to be praying to somebody.
That's something we can talk about later on, because we got to wrap it up right now. But Alex Lear is just a great play, and it's at where I got the thing.
The Hudson Theater.
The Hudson Theater, which is
Santa Monica Boulevard.
Yeah. It's Plasticity is the play. It runs January 28th, so let's pass that to March 13th.
We're going to extend the play.
That's what I was just going to ask you. And the performances are on Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 7 p.m., and Mondays at 8 p.m. And the Hudson Theater is 6539 Santa Monica Boulevard. Don't miss it, folks. It's a really remarkable experience, and it'll have you thinking and talking about it for quite some time. Alex, really good to see you again, and thanks a lot for the play, man.
A pleasure, brother.
Okay. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned.